Before we dive into the episode, make sure you hit subscribe on the podcast platform you're listening on. Also, follow me on X at The Dave Dynasty and subscribe on YouTube by looking up Nostalgic Dave Dynasty. You can also buy one of my shirts at ProWrestlingTees.com/TheDaveDynasty. Now, enjoy the show.
Welcome to 1 hour of the toughest, roughest wrestling you'll ever see.
That's right, Dick the Bruiser, set it off.
The big question, have you got the endurance? Have you got the brains to get past the excellence of execution?
Where are all the gutless American wrestlers? Step in the ring with the Baron and face the brains.
The reason why Axe and myself were put on this earth is to demolish people.
Bobby Heenan, that is a very good-looking sport coat you've got on.
Yeah, and I paid for mine. Mine is in government issue.
Hello, everybody. Lance Russell and Dave Brown right along ringside. By golly, we're ready to go with another big week of championship wrestling.
Greetings, wrestling fans, and welcome to Wrestling Nostalgia. I'm your host, Dave Dynasty. Hopefully you all are doing great. Thank you for all your support recently and all your downloads. The episodes have been doing wonderful. We've gotten lots of good feedback. And I hope that you are enjoying the interviews that I'm doing and putting out there. We've got lots more great ones coming up in the future, including on this episode. I have PN News on as my guest. We talk about wrestling in Europe, his WCW run, Salt and Peppa, and much, much more. And also, I just recently released the latest episode of the AWA Deep Dive series, looking at August 1988. So go check that out in the podcast archives. Now, next month, I will be diving into September of 1988. So if you have any questions about that month in AWA history, go ahead and submit those to me on social media to have me respond on that episode of the show. Speaking of the archives, I hope you're going back and checking out some of my past episodes. I've got tons of interviews with independent wrestlers, talent before they were stars, veterans, legends. There's literally something for everyone. So be sure to check them out and also make sure you subscribe so that you don't miss any future episodes. But once again, thank you for listening. Thank you for your support, all your feedback online, your engagement with me on social media. You guys have been absolutely wonderful, and I appreciate what you're doing for me. So let's go ahead and take a break and dive right into that interview with PN News. So stick around.
Hey guys, Ray Russell here, curator of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network, inviting you guys to listen to many of the programs here as part of the WrestleCopia brand, including, but not limited to, the Wrestling Memory Grenade, currently covering the 1988 and the WWF project. You can also listen to the Regional Wrestling Podcast, where we talk the territories, whether it's Jamie Ward with Georgia 81, Roman Gomez with the UWF in 1986, or Gene Jackson covering Memphis in 85. Three projects going on right now over there at Regional Wrestling. You can also listen to the Wrestling Stoop with the legend himself, Bob Roop. Bob goes back in time each and every week, covering not just his career, but countless stories and interactions with hundreds of wrestling names spanning his two decades in the business. But that's not all. You can also check out the Puro Wrestling Academy with the professor of Puro Resu, Mr. Dan Ginnity. Dan and I go back in time and cover the history of Japanese professional wrestling in the English language. And you can listen to all of those shows and more, all part of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network, located over at WrestleCopia.com. That's WrestleCopia.com, and anywhere your podcast streaming needs are met, from Apple to Spotify, Pocket Cast, and beyond. And while you're at it, why not subscribe to our social media guys for all the latest goings on here at the WrestleCopia Podcast Network? Plus, I'm constantly adding old school video clips and pictures from throughout wrestling history. You can follow us over on X, formerly Twitter, at Wrestling Grenade. That's at R-A-S-S-L-I-N Grenade. Also, follow and like me, Facebook.com/Wrestling Grenade. And why not subscribe to YouTube.com/Wrestling Grenade? So if you're looking to support that next up-and-coming podcast brand, please consider making it WrestleCopia.
This is Listen to Their Screams, a horror podcast that feels like you're chatting with friends. Hello, I am one of your friends, Dave. I am one of the co-hosts of Listen to Their Screams with my friend, Ike. And we want you to come and check us out. We are a fun-filled, positive horror movie podcast that does reviews, news, birthdays, anniversaries. We play games. We are a ton of fun every week for you, the horror fan out there. For all of our links to our social media and the podcast platforms, just check out our link tree. It is linktr.ee/listen2screams. That is listen, the number two, and screams. Or look us up on your favorite social media platform and podcast provider. And welcome back to Wrestling Nostalgia. This time I'm being joined by PN News, or better known to us now just as Paul New. Paul, how are you?
Yo, baby, man. I just had to throw it out there. Not that I would actually try to rap these days, man. I've got way too much Dame Bramage. So, I'm doing pretty good, man. I'm glad we finally get, you know what? I kept blowing you off and blowing.
No.
That sounds bad. I sound bad. I kept having to delay the conversation. So people don't get the wrong impression. But I'm glad we are finally here to make this work.
Yeah, me too. And I appreciate your time. So let's talk a little about your career. You were trained by Brad Riggins. Is that correct?
That is 100% correct. It wasn't just Brad Riggins. Drew Tossel was also there. And even the Nasty Boys helped out a little bit, because the Nasty Boys, they'd went through the camp with Vader the series before, and mm-hmm. they were living in the basement. So they were there all the time, kind of working out with us and stuff like that. So I don't know how much we were actually learning from the Nasty Boys, but it was Catch as Catch Camp. They were learning too. They were continuing to learn, and it was helpful because they've already been through it, you know? So.
Yeah,
that was helpful.
Yeah, so how did you make the decision to become a pro wrestler and get hooked up with them to get trained?
I didn't. No? I was forced to. No. I was playing some college ball, and it was I think the 86, the spring of 86. I had been I played for Kearney State in Nebraska, which is University of Kearney, Nebraska now. Mm-hmm. They were NAI Division I at the time. And I transferred to Nebraska, and I had been to the Nebraska football camp. I was invited to their camp in the summer before my senior year. And so they were aware of me. I'm not saying I was the greatest or anything like that, but they were aware of me. And then when I went to I ended up going to Kearney, and after Kearney, I went to the University of Nebraska, and then I was set to walk on Coach McBride. I went up to Coach McBride, who was a defense coordinator at the time, and back then the football offices were pretty wide open. So I just went up there. Hey, I'd like to talk to Coach McBride. And she didn't even ask him my name. She said, yeah, go right in. And I went in. I said, hey, Coach McBride, I don't know if you remember me. And he tilted his head and he looked at me. He goes, "You're Paul New." This was like 2 years before recruiting. He goes. Well, what he said exactly was CC, because I went to Cedar Catholic, so we had a CC on the side of our head. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. And it was CC. You're Paul New, and I went, "Yeah." I was just surprised that he remembered me, because how many guys is he looking at over the course of his year? And at the time, Nebraska was always one or two in the nation.
Yeah.
And I said, Coach, I'd like to walk on. You know, I've been playing in NAIA Division I, but I'd like to walk on. He said, all right, what do you need from me? And I already put on about 60 pounds. So I said, well, I need a nutritionist. So I said, okay, I'll set you up. Boom. Got everything set up. But I've been doing stupid stuff, like just having a good time at college instead of doing my studies. So I ended up getting in my finals, I got everything up into, a C- average by nailing my finals and everything, because partying got, college got in the way of partying. And, but I did drop out of a, I quit a class the first week and I didn't drop out of it. And it brought me down below a 2.0 grade point average. So I would have been penalized for that playing football. I ended up leaving school. And I ended up in Madison, Wisconsin, working the door from Lincoln, Nebraska, right? It's via South Padre, Texas. I met some guys that played in Wisconsin, and I ended up there and ended up in Madison, Wisconsin, bouncing at a bar called Buck's Madison Square Garden. And it was just off the square in Madison, you know, so it was a great name, right? And then yeah. Madison Square Garden. But anyway, it was good stuff. Well, one night I was working the top door and four guys kicked off and all the other doormen were busy. And I threw like four guys all out at one time, even jumped. I did Starsky and Hutch. I jumped over the back end of a slid off the back end of a Lincoln Town Car, tackled a guy in the street and said, "Don't you ever come back into my bar again." Well, when you turn around, all the windows, there's these huge windows, right? So yeah. The people at the front of the bar, they all saw this happen. So when they saw the fight go outside, everybody went to the windows. So as soon as I walked back into the bar, the whole place went, they screamed, right? And a guy named Bob Mattson, he was the state treasurer of Minnesota at the time. He was in Madison for a state treasurer's convention. And he said, so he's sitting at the bar and he goes, "Wow, that's the coolest thing I ever seen. You ever thought about being a pro wrestler?" And I went, "No," you know, but I called him. He was duck hunting, he was pheasant hunting in South Dakota. So it was the beginning of pheasant season. And he says, "Well, I'm going there and I come back, give me a call." So he kind of sponsored me through Brad Rangan's camp. And so I was in that camp just after, you know, so Vader and the Nasty Boys were in the camp in August. And I was doing the winter camp, mm-hmm. which I think there was maybe only one other guy that even did any wrestling out of that camp, right? And I was one of them. But I had the state treasurer of Minnesota. I had sports writers. I met Curtis Sliwa from the Guardian Angels. I was like a who's who before I'd even have a match, and it forced Vern to have to use me.
Yeah.
You know, because in the Minneapolis auditorium, the house was up by like 2,000 people on that first night. And I had like 12 Guardian Angels escorting me to the ring. So it happened to me before it happened with the One Man Gang.
Yeah.
I was the original that did that. And I did it with the AWA. And yeah, and so it was, business was up. But at the time, the AWA was really struggling and yeah. stuff. So.
Right. Yeah, and you end up going to Portland, right? You work for Don Owens, and you're working as Avalanche, right?
Best wrestling promoter I ever worked for. I love Don. Don, I love his family. I think Don Owens was amazing for a number of reasons. It's because I went out there. When I went out there at first, Rip Oliver had the book, mm-hmm. and Rip was going to New York on a day-to-day contract for Vince, you know, and
yeah.
So Rip was going to New York, which ended up not working out for him.
Yeah.
But Don had already hired a booker. Lynn Denton came in.
Mm-hmm.
Lynn Denton came in, and I was only working for Sandy Barr on Thursdays in Salem, Oregon at the Armory. And he saw me. He says, "Where? What have you been doing?" I said, "Well, I've been working AWA and PM News. I'm on ESPN." He actually knew because I was still on ESPN and stuff like that. Just that Rip didn't want to use me, right?
Yeah.
So Lenny went, "Okay, boom." They brought me in as a babyface. And Don used to, he loved doing for the TV. He always used to do the introductions, right? So mm-hmm. Don would stand in the corner and he would give me this long, glowing introduction, even though, you know, as a babyface, And just he was just clappy. I loved Don. And so he gave me a lot. And so I started to learn how to work a little bit more. But I was a 410-pound guy in a territory with like only 10 top wrestlers and another 6 or 7 undercard guys, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So they were going to ship me out. And then so they were looking for a place. I had a little bit of strep throat. They were looking for a place. And they were trying to get me booked in Tennessee, up in Calgary or whatever. And all of a sudden, you know, it was a Saturday night. I wasn't there. And Lenny and Don are going, Don said to Lenny, "You ever thought about turning the kid heel?" and fucking, and so he goes, "No, I didn't." So they turned me heel. And I got to work with, I was working with Chris Colt, which was, you know, if anybody, hardcore wrestling fans know who Chris Colt was. Great worker and stuff like that. His psychological mind, maybe not so much, but nowadays he'd be considered completely normal, I suppose.
Yeah.
But the thing is he had his ghosts, and but I learned a lot from Chris. And then I worked with Mike Galloway, Mike Golden. I ended up winning. We ended up putting us over for the tag belts and stuff like that against Southern Rockers, Steve Dahl and Scott Peterson at the time. And we did our little run and stuff, and that went good. And then they had me turn on Mike. And so Mike went babyface. Mike was on his way out. I got stronger. And then I was sitting in a car with Lynn because all the heels would travel together. And we were always traveling in Lenny's Pathfinder at the time. I said, "Listen, buddy, and Colonel De Beers wasn't in the car yet." So I said, "Buddy," I said to Lenny, I said, "I got an idea for a gimmick." He goes, "What is it?" I said, "What if you?" Because he said, "Why don't you put me and Buddy in Bermuda shorts?" And because I had bleach blonde hair because of Mike Galloway was doing the Golden Boy gimmick, and so I made myself every week. I kind of got a little bit more blonde hair, so. And so I was, you know, so my hair was bleach blonde at the time. So I'm kind of like a bleach blonde mohawk. And I said, "Why don't you put me and Buddy together and call us?" You know, because Buddy was Playboy, Buddy Rose.
Yeah.
And he was tagging in the AWA when I was there with Doug Summers, you know,
yep,
Pretty Boy
yep.
and the Playboy. Fucking great tag team. I love watching
that
guy.
Yeah.
And that's even another story. But anyway, and Lenny loved it. Don loved it. The only one didn't love it was Buddy, because he's got to carry a fat green one like myself, right? But it worked out, and it really we did good, and we put asses in seats. It went really well, and I was proud of myself, and it was good, and I love being out in Portland. And then from Portland, that's when Fujinami discovered me. For New Japan, it was when what had happened was Bam Bam was in New York, so he was over in Japan, but he was over in New York now, right? Mm-hmm. And so he wasn't allowed to work for New Japan anymore. Fujinami came in, and he was doing like a world tour. He was doing Portland, he was doing, I think he did Kansas City, you know, for Daigo. Then he might have done you know, Continental, and then he ended up in Germany. Right before he flew back, and he was doing all these belts. He was collecting belts, so yeah. he wrestled like Lenny for the Portland, you know, PW. He was wrestled for the heavyweight championship there. He wrestled then in whatever Geigel was offering him, then Continental, and then in Germany he was wrestling for the middleweight championship or something like that. And so, and then when he was in Germany in Hanover, what had happened was, and he had to wrestle Tony Sinclair back then. Tony Sinclair, hell of an English wrestler, you know.
Yep, yep.
Shame he never got any kind of break in the USA, but hell of a talent. Anyway, so he ended up with Otto Vance in there, and Otto just lost, Jim Harris, just had to leave. He had family issues, so he had to leave Hanover, and he couldn't do the Bremen tour. And they, you know, I just got my phone like a week before, and Fujinami gave him my picture, and he said, "Oh, he's perfect." he called me up out in Portland. My first ever phone call was a promoter from Germany, and I'd met Otto in the AWA, and when he gave me his card, I had no idea who he was. You know, even though he was the heavyweight champion at the time, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's how I was not into the, you know, for me, it wasn't an ego. I thought it was easy money. I thought wrestling was easy money. Okay, boy, was I fucking wrong.
Yeah.
But anyway, so Otto called me, hey, Grizzly, I want you to do Avalanche. I want you to come to Germany. I'm like, okay, yeah, whatever. I had to go to Seattle. I got like a passport in an hour. I was on a plane within 4 days. My first trip over Frankfurt in at Bremen. And I did 5 weeks, and I was hired on the after my first match there. He'd already asked me to come back for the next year in Austria and all that stuff. So, and I wrestled a guy named Danny Collins. Danny Collins, he's like him and Fit Finley has a great. Anybody listening is interested in British wrestling, Danny Collins, look it up. Danny Boy Collins, you're not going to regret it. Some incredible wrestling. And it way before his time, you know, way before his time. And he's like with Fit Finley and stuff. And so, but Danny was my first match. And he, it's funny because he just got like, he'd had a kidney removed. So he was like almost fresh out of surgery. And he was like 150 pounds. And he's like my first match in Germany. And I hit him with a splash off the top rope. Didn't lay a finger on him.
Yeah. Well, Otto's Catch Wrestling Association, man, it's often overlooked, right? Because you know, it didn't get talked about a lot in history, but man, he promoted over 20 years there and had a great run in Germany.
Well, think about this. Everywhere there's always been big wrestling organizations. They've always had television to be able to promote their organization. Otto had no television.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And he still, you know, did a good job. What happened was they were behind the times. They tried to get it on Eurosport with the French. So there was what was his name? Flesh Gordon. There was Orrick Williams. There was Brian Dixon. There was Otto Vance. Might have been one or other two European promoters that were involved with the thing. And nobody had an idea. The Eurosport said, we want a WWE-type product.
Yeah, yeah.
And because all these promoters all had their own ideas, and none of them were really, really any good at telling a story. They all just wanted to push their own agenda. And it made it even bigger clusterfuck than the WCW back in the late 80s, early 90s, you know?
Yeah.
It was absolutely ridiculous. But Otto Vance, it was overlooked because Otto Vance, I'll give you an example. We would start in some obscure town to kind of get warmed up, maybe for 3 days in a circus tent somewhere. And we'd do that, and we'd all get going. And then we'd do one other small weekend. So we'd have about 3 or 4 days off, travel to the next town. We'd do that next one. And then we would start in Linz back then. And we'd start in Linz, and Linz was 28 days. So you stayed for 4 weeks in Linz, and then you would do the tournament championship. Throughout the tournament, you would have tag team championships. You would have middleweight championships and heavyweight championships in order to draw more crowds. But these houses were full, whether it was between 2,000 or 3,000 people, or these houses were always full at least 3, maybe 4 days a week, you know. And then there were a couple of days where you were playing to 500 people or less, you know. But that's just the way it was, right? But you were telling a story, and so we would do Linz 4 weeks, then 3 weeks in Graz, then 2 months in Vienna, a weekend in Seeboden and up in the Alps, which is like a vacation, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we were living the life. We were laying in the sun all day long. We'd drive 30 minutes into Vienna and then we'd drive 30 minutes back home. It was just a holiday, but you were putting your body through the abuse. And then we would do almost two months in Hanover. And then we'd do 5 weeks in Bremen at the end. And in between Hanover and Bremen, sometimes we did 10 days in Dortmund or something.
Yeah.
And that was just great because you you weren't putting the abuse of the traveling on your body.
Right.
Because
yeah.
the traveling does, I've always said the traveling I did in England abused my body way more than the abuse I put it through doing anything. So you're in a cramped car, you're five guys, and you're sitting here with your hands on your knees, your elbows on your knees and stuff like that, and you can't turn left or right for 5 or 6 hours. That did more abuse to my body than the actual taking all the big bumps that I took. So, but but you know, CWA, back at that, underwrite it, it was good. WWE, WWF, the WWF, and them going on TV over there, and eventually WCW just killed it. All of a sudden, we were no longer superstars.
Yeah.
We were doing variety shows and regular TV shows, invited to TV shows in German television, to not being invited anymore because now Hulk Hogan and the Ultimate Warrior and those guys were superstars. We were just guys. We were just circus. We were just circus players.
Well, in 1991, you started your most memorable run which was in WCW. What most people remember you as. SPN News. So how did you connect in WCW to get signed by them?
Randy Colley.
Okay.
I was in Germany. Everything's kind of tied to Germany. So I was in Germany, and I'd been in there with Moondog Rex. We were in Bremen. We'd done the whole year together. We were pretty tight. We'd go to the gym together, and we'd hang out and go eating, and our campers, we'd stay in campers over there. We, you know, rent, or I bought one, and I just stayed in the camper because it was just convenient. So so Randy was around, and Randy, so it was like November, and Randy goes, dude, you don't have to stay here, because I'd already been to Japan once, and I was just and now Sakaguchi's just asked me to come back to Japan.
Yeah.
But I was thinking, but as an American, I'm thinking, God, I want to go be on TV, you know?
Yeah.
My ego's playing with me, you know? Hindsight's 2020 is something else, but my ego's playing with my head. Hey, listen, I'm getting over. What the fuck, right? Mm-hmm. You know, might as well do it in my homeland. And so I'm back there with Randy. We're sitting in Bremen. We get in a phone booth together. I'm 400 pounds. Randy's like 280, and we're in a little tiny phone booth together, talking to Ole Anderson, who was the booker at the WCW at the time. And on Randy's word, Ole said, "Yeah, tell him he can start in January." So I had a job. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
No question about it. And then by the time we got back to the States after Christmas. Ollie's been fired. He's locked up all his files. Nobody knows me from Adam. Dusty's taken over, but I still show up down at Randy's house. He takes me to TV, and they give me a dark match. And so I thought my dark match sucked, but I nailed it, apparently, according to them. And Dusty wanted me to start. He just didn't have the starting date yet. So, yeah. So first he brings in his kid, and then he brings in Matt Bourne is Big Josh,
yeah,
and stuff. So, and I knew Matt from I knew Matt from Oregon stuff.
Yeah,
so,
Portland. Yeah,
and so he brings them in, and I'm like the first new guy he's brought in. He goes, and I did a rap for him in the office, and they loved it. And they said, "All right, you're going to start." They set up the Great American Bash commercials. I wasn't under contract. And they set up all this stuff, and I've already filmed all that stuff. And my first match goes out on TV. People in the South love it. You know, Northeast, let's not even talk about it, because they just hate anything babyface. And the fact that my rap actually sucked. Once they got me in the arena, I didn't have any. So if you're in a huge arena and you've got all the speakers in the back, it takes yep. like a split second for the music to come back. I had no playback speed for me. So when I started rapping, I'm like, what's the fuck? Oh, fuck. You know what I mean? Just,
yeah.
Because it's throwing you off. And it took me about 10 TVs to get used to that fucking shit.
Yeah.
right?
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Nobody thought about that. Nobody fucking thought about that. But you know what? Who gets the heat for being a shit rapper? The yep. shit rapper.
Yeah.
Yeah. The shit rapper, right? So, yeah. But nobody thinks about the situation, which I'm good with. I don't give a damn.
Yeah.
It doesn't duck off the water's back, man. The only thing that can hurt me is if I allow something to hurt me. Fuck it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So did Dusty come up with the PN News name, or did you?
He came up with the name. I had the gimmick. I came back to CWA. I'm sitting with, I think I was sitting with Scott Hall, and maybe it might have been either Charles Wright what's his name? Chris Benoit. Might have been all four of us. I don't know. But I was thinking, I said, want to do this rap and give it blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I'd do it, right? So I ended up making photos over there, and I kind of took like a page out of the Fat Boys, and because the Fat Boys was my inspiration for the Beach Boys.
Mm-hmm.
And so Wipeout, that was the Beach Boys song, was yep. Wipeout, and then the rap.
Yeah.
And then so I had some Bermuda shorts made over there. And I put the stuff on, and I made these sunglasses myself with all the diamonds on it. And I had the photos made, right? And it looked good, you know. So that was my thing. And I called myself PJ Cool. And then I was like, okay, that sounds cool. And so I had PJ Cool written, and I had my info down kind of like a video, right?
Yeah.
So everything was on the picture, and you know, in the background and stuff. So I thought it was pretty cool. They loved it, right? And then, so that's kind of where we went to. And then I was sitting there when Dusty finally said, from the time he said, just be patient, to when they called me in March, which is like 2 months, he said, all right, come into the office. We're going to talk to you. So I showed him my gear, and I showed him what I had and stuff like that. And I was having some more stuff made. But I had my gear, and he goes, can you rap? And so I laid out a rap on him. He loved it, right? And he goes, listen, instead of PGA Cool, we're going to call you PN News. And I said, why PN News? Well, CNN, PNN, you understand. It's going to have that correlation. People are going to understand that CNN, because Ted Turner is the owner of the company, if you will. You know, and I'm like, all right, what the fuck's a pronoun, Dusty? No, that's a different story altogether.
Yeah.
But no, but that's exactly what I thought. And he goes, I said, okay, whatever, you know, and it's in my name, so they're going to be a hard time taking it away from me because my name is new.
Yep.
And I was like, okay, fine, let's do it, you know. And if this doesn't work out, we'll try something else. If you will, we'll try something else out, baby. I'm like, okay, Dusty, fucking whatever. I signed the contract, whatever. It wasn't the worst mistake of my life. I wish I'd have continued on for another 2 years with New Japan and the CWA instead of going to WC. You know what? I'm 20 some years old, and I'm early 20s, and I didn't know how to connect point A to point B to point C to point D. You know what I mean? I just thought, go to the WCW, man. And I realize now that if I could have done it all over again, I just got my shit over in New Japan and in CWA, and I'd just set my own, you know, my own history, you know. So.
Yeah. Man, I'm not afraid to admit, man. Back in the day, I was a huge Fat Boys fan.
I'm sorry about that, dude. I don't know.
Yeah, in retrospect, it didn't play out too well. But.
No, but the thing about it is, it's not my favorite character. I love being Cannonball Grizzly.
Yeah,
Grizzly was a completely different character and stuff like that. And I love being Cannonball Grizzly. I like being the heel. And it was so much funner, and I was really good at it. And then when I was a heel for so long in Europe, and then when I finally turned babyface, I was able to maintain the character I was as a heel as a babyface, which made me a much better babyface.
Yeah.
That's why I wish I could have went into the WCW as a heel.
Yeah.
And then maybe eventually turn babyface if it warranted it. But you asked that question earlier about the whole PN News and the whole thing. I was in 19 when my daughter was in the womb of my ex-wife, right? When my daughter was being born in 93 is when Men on a Mission started. And this was after my run as PN News. Mm-hmm. Well, I went to the King of the Ring just to stay and say hello. I was selling stuff off, and we were getting ready to move all over to Europe at the time. And moved back to Austria. We moved to Austria for my ex, and we were going to have the baby over there. And I went to Ohio to the King of the Ring. So that was the very first one. And so Sergeant Slaughter, who was like in charge of the new talent at the time, he came running up to me. He knew who I was, and he came up to me. He goes, "Where have you been?" I said, "What do you mean?" He goes, "Because I was in Europe making money, right?" Mm-hmm. And he goes, "Where have you been, man? We've been trying to get a hold of you." I said, "What for?" He says, "We had a gimmick for you." I said, "No shit." I said, "Well, I'm here now." You know? He goes, "No." He said, "It's too late." And then so I talked to him. I talked to Pat. I said hello to Vince. Everything they all wanted me to just sit and wait till the next month, and then they were going to do another dark match with me, and they were going to talk about a gimmick. I couldn't. I had to go back and make money. My daughter was on the way, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I, you know, I left, and I never looked back. But I missed out on an opportunity there. But the thing is, that weekend was the weekend that Men on a Mission started. So that was, they did their first team meet. So what they wanted is they wanted me to be a part of that gimmick. And because they couldn't get a hold of me, I missed out on that, right? And yeah. I'd actually talked to V a few years later, and he confirmed that they wanted me to do that with him.
Yeah. So I assume they probably wanted you, what, in that third, that Oscar, instead of Oscar, right? Because Oscar didn't really have any.
Yeah, I think they wanted me wrestling. I don't know if I was going to be V's partner or what the deal was, but they wanted me wrestling, man. And so if they wanted me rapping, whatever, but I did want it be wrestling. They
man,
knew,
that's wild.
They knew what they had. Cause I mean, Pat Patterson liked my work. You know what I mean? He didn't like me for my looks. So I wasn't worried about that, but he did like my work.
Yeah. So when you were in WCW, who, did you come up with the Yo Baby Yo thing, and did you write your own raps to the ring and rhymes?
Diamond, no, I had some help with the raps sometimes. Some of them I did on my own. But the guy who came up with Yo Baby Yo, and I wish, and Dallas, if you're listening, man, give me a shout out. I sent you a message the other day. Dallas Page actually came up with the Yo Baby Yo idea. You know, he said, "Oh, you got to build a character. You need that. Spreckward, you need that something that everybody can remember you by." And he went like "Yo baby, yo baby, yo." And that's what I just went with, right? And it wasn't like it was my original thing. I mean, it was, you know, from what was that? Who was the rap group that did the "Yo baby, yo baby, yo"? I don't know. Yeah, we're talking the early '80s rap. You know,
yeah,
early,
I don't know.
Early rap music. I can't think of it right now because I listen to all sorts of music. I'm into everything, so not just rap music. So, and besides, I've landed on my head so many times, and I told you at the beginning, I've got brain Dame Bramage.
Yeah, well, at Clash 15, you came out with Salt and Pepper, and that had to be a pretty cool and fun mainstream crossover because, man, Salt and Pepper, they were huge at that time.
Salt and Pepper were huge. They came to, it was in Knoxville, Tennessee. They came there. It was great. Again, I was still struggling with the, because I was barely with the company, and I was still struggling with that playback mic, playback speaker. Mm-hmm. So it was all coming back later. So I wasn't really set, but I had, it wasn't Salt and Pepper. It was Salt and Spinderella. Mm-hmm. It was Pepper and Spinderella. Mm-hmm. Salt was home because she was pregnant, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So Spinderella and Pepper came, and really lovely girls, man. I enjoyed every minute I spent with them, and they wanted to come and do it again. And Jim Hurd said, "Yeah, they can pay for their own ticket." So I already had heat. I had heat at that point because I was getting over, you know. And I don't know who I got. I don't know if it was. Ricky Morton told me a story And it was when I was in Dothan, Alabama. And when the thing is, back in the way we used to do TV, there were 24 matches, and a lot of guys would sit there and they'd sit in the monitor and they watch the monitor. And they watch the matches. So when you came back from your match and there was nobody watching the monitor, it's only because nobody wanted to tell you, hey, you had a good match, right? So, and that happened to me a couple of times. There was, when I went out there, there were 50 guys watching the monitor. And that was in center stage in Atlanta. And the only two guys that were waiting for me was were the Freebirds. And Michael Hayes goes, man, I've never seen anybody pop a house the way you just did the first time they were ever in a venue. Not, he goes, not Ric Flair, not Hulk Hogan, right? And I was like, I'm like, wow, cool, you know? He said, and then so that was neat. I didn't let it get to my head. I never thought about it. It was just, I was just doing the gimmick, right? So I didn't think about it. I was just in the moment. And then about a month later, I was in Dothan, Alabama, and the same thing happened. Nobody was there at the end of the match because I went out in Dothan, and there was like eight matches before me, and this is a TV, so you know what it's like. The TVs back then, after four or five matches, the crowd was just dead. Then, because they've already seen everything. And so I was like eighth that night, and Dustin had been on a couple of times, and stuff like that. And people were sitting on their hands. That night, the only three people that got any kind of response was Sting, the Steiners, and myself. And I was the first one because Steiners and Sting, that was always later on the show. And so I came out in the eighth match, and everybody was up. They were dancing in the aisles and stuff like that. And when my match was over, I went back, and nobody was sitting there watching the monitor because nobody wanted to say anything. It was just Ricky Morton. And Ricky Morton said to me, he goes, I'm going to tell you a story. And I said, what's that, Ricky? He said, in Asheville, North Carolina, the Road Warriors and Dusty Rhodes went in the six-man tag against the, you know, against the Russians, and they set a house record, right? So they were set a house record. 2 weeks later, the Midnight Express and the Rock and Roll Express went in there and they broke the record. And the next week at TV, Dusty said, "Babe, I want to tell you something. Whatever you do, never outshine the Booker." Yeah, and at that point they started just beating the Rockers like a dog, right? And they ended up going to Texas at that point. So Ricky said, "What you've just done is you just outshined indirectly. I just outshined the Booker's son, and I got over." And that's when, and then I swear to God, it was that next week where they started turning on me. The office started turning on me. I swear to God, and it was just after what Ricky Morton had said to me. So. And listen, this is all hearsay. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Nobody has to believe what I'm telling you. It's just, it's truly hearsay. But this is what I know. This is what I know, and those are the facts that I've been told as I went through it. Man, makes for a good reason reading and good listening. But these are actual. This is the shit that when it really went down. So.
Tell us the story, because I read that you were falsely accused of stealing money in the locker room on an overseas tour. What was that about? Listen, why did that come up?
Listen, somebody was stealing something out of the dressing rooms and stuff like that. There was things going missing, gold chains. From what I understood, is there was gold chains, there was things going missing and stuff like that. So I didn't know anything about it. I had never heard about it or anything like that. So we went on this tour in England, and I did the pre-tour. And then at the time, I had no credit history, so I got myself a secured credit card. But I didn't get the secured credit card. I ordered it like in September, and it came like the first week of December, the week we left for the tour. So I had a $500 secured credit card, and that's all I had on me for backup. We were getting snipings of 100 pounds or whatever it was every night, and that's what we would live on. Well, they gave us the snipings at the beginning, so I had that. And then I had my card. Well, at some point, we were in Sheffield, because it was in Sheffield. Everything was good to London. The time we did two shows in London, then we went to Sheffield. In Sheffield, my wallet got cleaned out. Terry Taylor's wallet got cleaned out. That's all I know. Our wallets got cleaned out. So that next day, that night, I went back to the Sheffield Hotel, and everybody knowing that something happened. And I knew at the time already in England, I said to Grizzly Smith, I said, Grizz, get the police involved. He didn't want to get the police involved. Mm-hmm. I said, get the police involved. There were cameras everywhere. Already in Britain, everywhere there were already cameras. And I knew this because I'd already worked in Britain before.
Yeah.
So I said, get the police. He didn't want to get the police involved, right? So I'd done my diligence to try to get the police involved. So since my money was gone and Terry's money was gone, and some of the guys that were driving with, they all knew that I didn't have a credit card. It came that week. Like I said, it just came that week. And so when I was drinking at the bar and they were all like, well, he doesn't got any money. Well, I put it all in my room. And in the morning when I checked out, I put it on that credit card.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then we went to Dublin. And then after Dublin, we flew back to the United States. Well, on that flight back to the United States, people were kayfabing me. Fucking, I was like, what the fuck's going on? And Bill Cashman said, dude, they think you stole Terry's money. I went, how the fuck do they think that? Yeah, blah, 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 blah. I hear this. I pulled Terry aside. I was fucking, there were almost tears in my eyes. I said, Terry, I didn't do anything. Man, I don't know why, what the fuck's going on here, but I lost my fucking money. Nobody asked to see the credit card or anything like that. Mm-hmm. They just fucking blatantly accused me, you know. But I'll tell you what, telephone, telegraph, tell a wrestler, they all fucking, you know, if somebody's getting over, they're going to stab you in the back in a hurry to fucking get over. They want to climb over your corpse, get on top. And there are a lot of people that didn't like a fucking fat guy from Nebraska getting over as a rapper. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, what ended up leading to you leaving WCW?
That was it, man. They weren't going to renew the contract, so mm-hmm. I ended up leaving. I did some independents, and then I did a few independent. Car broke down. I ended up back in Europe because my daughter was on the way. Yeah. And my wife went to. We decided we were going to raise a daughter in Austria, so we started moving everything back to Austria. And then I had already been wrestling in England, and I came back from England, sold the rest of our stuff out of the house, and then I was going to fly over. Between that, I went to Ohio to the first King of the Ring.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that's when Sergeant Slaughter's going, where you been? Where you been, man? We've been looking for you, right?
Yeah. So
that's basically when all that kind of shit went down.
So. Yeah. Yeah, you mentioned earlier, right? That the time you were in WCW, man, it was very chaotic, right? With the bookers and the leadership and everything else. Were there any other ideals pitched to you or promises made to you that never came through? Because lots of guys have talked about that, right? Things pitched to them and never happened.
No, well, I know Kevin Nash got like three or four stuff, and he got to try each one of them, but the rest of us, no. Dusty promised me the fucking moon if PN News doesn't get over to do that. And I got rubbed the wrong way. I guess they really didn't see me. They didn't see me in their future. So I was promised the moon at the beginning, and then they just took it. They just pulled the rug right out from under me. And I know it went for a lot of guys. So I'm not bitching and moaning because that's the industry. That's entertainment,
yep.
Man.
Yep.
There's because you really, there's how do you judge who really is the best wrestler in the world? Come on, yeah. Let's really put a label on that. What is the whole criteria to who really truly is the best wrestler in the world? Is it Ric Flair? Is it Hulk Hogan? Is it, I mean, you know what? And I don't think either one of those two are the best. More so Ric Flair maybe than Hulk Hogan, but Hulk Hogan, right place, right time. What did he do? What did those guys do? Hulk Hogan told his story. He sold his same story over and over again. And it got over and the people were behind it. So that makes him, he followed a script and he did that story. It didn't matter who he was in the ring with, But on the other hand, if you ever saw some of Hulk Hogan stuff in Japan, the guy could work.
Yeah.
You know what
yeah.
I mean? So he, when you, once you get to the WWE, at one point it was just all you got. Hey, Jake the Snake will tell you, dude, do four things, and that's all you really need to do, you know. And Jake was simple, but he told a hell of a story, you know.
Yep.
And that was the thing. I thought, as a semi fan, I really love Martel and Jake the Snake's angle that they did.
Yep.
Which I don't remember which WrestleMania with that was, but the whole thing, and I thought that was probably one of the best angles, and it felt personal. You know, it was kind of like Steamboat and Macho Man Savage. That kind of felt personal.
Yeah.
And that's the last time I really ever felt that way about wrestling, you know, but I was already wrestling at the time. So,
yeah. So. Well, and around 1999, you showed up in ECW for a couple months as part of the Baldies. Did you know Paul Heyman from your time in WCW? Is that how it came for you to come in ECW?
Yeah, of course. I mean, you can find it on me. I did the Danger Zone on WCW. Paulie put me over really good, and then with the WCW, we had to do Missy Hyatt and Paul Heyman. There were a couple of mixed tags with Terry Taylor and I believe Arn Anderson.
Yeah,
and one was in the Meadowlands, and I'm not going to mention any names. They know who they are, but they were saying, "Hey, break his legs." They wanted me to hurt Paulie. There were a few people backstage who says, hurt him. They didn't like Paulie at all.
Yeah.
And I didn't. I took Paulie was scared to death, and he thanked me over and over again because I took care of him. And then that was when I got hired, when I did get hired in 99 for Paulie, after just doing one little match with, what's his name? Dudley, Spike.
Mm-hmm.
With Spike Dudley. You know, they said, okay, just go in there and get the win. I said, listen, that's what you did with One Man Gang. That's what you did with Bam Bam. That's what you did 9-1-1 or whatever. I said, why don't we just do it where we just do the freak out real quick, where run him up the ropes, he doesn't get it. And then I go to hit the avalanche, he misses it, and then he hits his finish. And I said, okay, I love it. Boom. And it got over. And it was there at the Philadelphia Arena. It got over. I did like a hate rap for Philly and stuff, and shit was good. And it worked out, and then they put me with so I did a lot of matches with their top guys, where there was Mike Awesome, Sabu, and also with Van Damme, and I did a lot. I put all those guys over and stuff, and talent shows, had some good matches, and then their idea was to come up with the Baldies, and I enjoyed working with those guys in the Baldies. It is what it is, but you weren't making a lot of money at that time, WCW being mid-card.
Yeah.
No, even the big cut, even the top guys are trying to get paid. And so what I ended up doing was I ended up moving back to Nebraska so I could work during the week so I could afford to wrestle on weekends.
Yeah.
And so I stopped getting booked because the flights were more expensive from there than they were from Atlanta, where I was at before. So
and obviously wrestling was changing, right? I mean, the independent territories were drying up. There wasn't as many places to work.
Absolutely, but at the same time, the crazy thing about it is England was starting to pop. So within, I my hip was bad, and this is one thing I never talked about anybody in WCW. My hip was bad. I would go into the bathroom and hide, because I was in so much pain because I'd messed up my hip really bad. So to tie up my thing, I'd tie up my left boot. I was sweating to death. I was almost ready to cry. So I'd always hide in the bathroom, tie my fucking boot. And so when I, would come out, and then I would do the best I could and stuff. And then I ended up selling cars for 6 or 8 months, gave time for the hip to heal. And then I ended up going the end of December when Yokozuna passed away in England. They were selling out venues all over the country with ex-WWE guys and kayfabe gimmicks and all sorts of stuff. And they were selling it all over the country. And Yokozuna passed away in Liverpool. And I was the first guy Brian thought of. So I was out, boom. I just got back on the plane. And then I had a really good run at that point. You know, yeah. I mean, internationally, I was going to a lot of different places. So,
yeah. Well, Ed, listen, I'm going to shift gears. You recently had your first official action figure come out. You were supposed to have a WCW Galoot figure back in the day, but it never got released. There's prototypes that have come out and, you know, been seen, but it never got publicly released. But you now have a figure through KWK, Kayfabe Heroes line. You can, for people listening, you can purchase that at shopkwk.com. So how did that come out? How cool is it after all these years now that you finally have a figure out there?
Well, you know, okay, to get into that, the original Galoot figure, there was only like four prototypes made from that.
Yeah.
And I know that in 2014, I think it was, one went for about $1,700 in an auction.
Yep.
And I think there's only three of them left right now. And so with that in mind, I thought it was pretty cool when Sean came to me for this idea, and then he asked me to get Mantar involved, yeah, or Mike Halleck, you know?
Yeah.
And so in Mike's figures, they ended up selling out. Unfortunately, he passed away, but Mike's figures look great. You know, what Sean's done with my figures, he's got like the gold chains are removable, the hat's removable, the glass. It's really neat what he's done. And Sean invests so much time in what he does.
Yeah.
And he takes so much pride in with it. I think it's amazing. What KWK, we've also got a t-shirt coming out with PM News. But, you know, Sean's picky. You know, he wants to make sure that these things are done right and everything like that. So it might take a little bit more time. But what he does is he's really good at it. And if there were 25 hours in a day, I'm sure he'd be working 25 of them.
Yeah.
But he works really hard at it. And then I've got these top rope figures. There are 3D copies of the glue prototype. Mm. They're going to be coming out really soon. I'll send you the link for that. And I'm really excited about those. And there's also going to be a limited edition. Then we'll go from there. We'll see what happens in the future. And I was thinking about maybe doing, you know, getting out there and doing a couple of the Comic-Cons or whatever shows. I mean, I got my feet in the water, my toes in the water and a couple of different things. So,
yeah.
But as soon as I know, I can pass that information.
Yeah, on. Yeah, please do. Yeah, Sean's a good guy. I've talked to Sean many times. He's a very cool guy. And it's a good time for that kind of stuff because right now nostalgia sells, right? Everybody, I think everybody's so, just disgruntled, maybe. I guess older fans, right, that watch for, just I don't get into the current product, right? So I remember the product that I loved. So right now nostalgia sells.
Well, I think it is, especially for guys like us that have been around for a while. I think nostalgia is really important. I think that, and I think it's even for the younger generation, I think a lot of them have a lot of respect for what we did.
Yeah.
And you can watch a lot of matches nowadays on YouTube or whatever from X guys. And anybody that starts watching, like, I mean, before I plugged Danny Collins or David Finley or Dave Taylor or stuff like that, if you watch any of their old stuff, you're just going to be going, wow, these guys are just way ahead of their time when it comes to all that stuff. I mean, I was there when Finley wrestled Chris Benoit and Brayman. What a match. Oh, my God. You cannot imagine. It's like Dynamite Kid and anybody else that he wrestled in his era. And Finley was such a ring general. I'm more impressed about Dave Finley and his ability than anybody in the industry before or since.
Yeah. Yeah. And obviously, I mean, it's so underappreciated, but like you said, right, you got the figures out, some future figures coming out, some t-shirts coming out, potential convention appearances and con appearances. What's the best way for fans to follow you to keep track of these things as they're announced? Do you have a way?
Well, funny you should ask it, and I don't yet, but we're coming out with I'm going to be starting to do a podcast. And it's not a podcast. It's not about a podcast about wrestling. It's going to be just geopolitical. It's going to be about a little bit of everything. And it's also not going to just be about bad news. It's going to be about good news, too. Because I'm just every time I turn on YouTube or I look at something, it's all about, hey, the world's going to end if you don't do this. The world's going to end if you don't do this. If you don't get another, you know, if you don't get another shot, you're gonna die at age 12 or whatever. The sun's going to explode in 12 years, or the atmosphere is going to burn up. I'm just so sick of it, and I want to do something that's fun, but at the same time, tackles from both perspectives, tackles what's really going on. Because a lot of the time when you look at the news, all you do is you see one perspective and then an argument. I would like to see both perspectives, as long as both sides have an argument and they just don't say, hey, trust the science or whatever. No, I don't want to trust the science. Show me the science and then show me what I'm supposed to trust. You know what I mean? Yeah. Don't tell me I have to trust something, because I find, you know, like I find governments become the new God, you know, and I can have faith in God, but doesn't mean I have to have faith in my government, you know, or any government. So there's going to be that, and the show is going to be called News with Attitude.
There you go.
So, and it's going to be all over. We'll be in all your, where you get your podcast. It'll be on YouTube and stuff like that. As soon as I get it, then you can add the link to this, or maybe we can get back on because we're looking to launch in the next couple of weeks. So, I'm launching with Monty and the Pharaoh. So those guys, you know, work with them before, so they're on board for it. So it should be a lot of fun, and should just be interesting for anybody that just wants to listen to somebody waffle that has an opinion. We all have opinions. Everybody, you know, like assholes, everybody's got an opinion.
Everybody's got one, right?
But I got a really big asshole, so my opinion's bigger than everybody else.
There you go. Yeah, those guys do a lot of good content and stuff. So those are good guys to work with.
Yeah, absolutely. And, absolutely. Man, great guys.
Yeah, I tell you, man, you were just born with the right name to just market different things with, right? With the new thing. Because, I mean, PN News, the news with that. I mean, there's so much stuff you could do.
You know what? I'll tell you what. I started out, I remember I kind of fancied this girl. And at the time, there was a modern English, there was a song in the early 80s called I'll Stop the World and Melt with You.
Yep.
It was obviously changed to I'll Stop the World and Melt with New.
There you go.
You know, so that's, man. You know, I always try to market myself, bro.
That's so many t-shirt ideas. I mean, there's just so many. Right? So many things you can do.
Right. And, well, keep me informed, man. I'll cut you in, bro.
Yeah. There you go. Well, Paul, thanks for, I mean, like you said, we've been trying to do this for a while, and you got a busy schedule. I got a busy schedule, and it's, you know, in real life, and I'm glad we got to finally sit down and do this. I'll share when things come up, right? With these all these figures and things as you post them, I'll let my listeners know what's going on with your stuff, and as it comes up. And you already told me ahead of time when we were chatting that there's no rapping. You're not gonna rap for me, so I guess we've touched all the bait. But you did open up with a Yo Baby Yo, so I got that.
Yeah, well, you know what? I could close with that too, Dave.
There you go.
You know what I mean?
All right. So, well, all right.
So if we're wrapping up here now, because I see we're at about 58 and a half.
Yep,
let's wrap it up. I just like to say, ladies and gentlemen, it has been a pleasure talking at y'all. Because I may not be Dustin Rhodes, but I've been around the Tower of Power, too sweet to be sour. And I appreciate y'all, and thanks for listening, if you will. Because I am PN News. I'm here to let you know. I'm here to bum rush this show, not from the streets, not doing crime. That's why I crush sucker wrestlers all the time. My name is News, and I'm on the attack. Check me out later, because I'll be back. Yo, baby, yo.
Man, my life is complete.
I knew it would be.
I have been. That's it. I'm done. I can't stop that.
Hey everybody, Gene Jackson here, inviting you to check out the Retro Wrestling Review, where each week I'm joined by some great co-hosts who help me review classic episodes of USWA Championship Wrestling, and right now we are doing week-by-week reviews of 1993. But we don't just do reviews, sometimes we get a chance to interview some of the people who were there and lived it, plus do watch-alongs. It's a lot of fun, so check out new episodes that drop every Wednesday at WrestleCopia.com. And to find links to everything associated to the podcast, you can go to uswapodcast.com.
All right, yo, baby, yo. Thank you, PN News, for coming on the show. Thank you, PN News, for dropping a little rap for me and making my day. I feel like
I don't know. I just feel like something on the bucket list has been checked off. I don't know. It's like something I just didn't know I needed in my life until I had it. And thank you, PN News, for your time. Guys, go and follow me on X. It's the best way to keep track of what I'm doing and all my posts and engagements. It is at The Dave Dynasty on X. While you're out there and online perusing, go check out all the WrestleCopia Network podcasts. The shows are all great, have great hosts, focus on wrestling history, and just so entertaining. Go to WrestleCopia.com, or you can look up the specific shows on your favorite podcast platform. Also, be sure to check out my friends at the Ultimate Classic Wrestling Library. Once again, we talk about old school wrestling here, nostalgic wrestling, history of wrestling, and you'll find all of those things on the Ultimate Classic Wrestling Library channel. You can go to classicwrestling.net, or you can download their app on all of your devices. Now, next episode, my guest will be Rod Price. We will talk about world-class Steve Austin, Chris Adams, much, much more. It's a fun interview. Once again, you're going to want to hear this, obviously, so make sure you subscribe and you don't miss that episode. Guys, thank you once again for tuning in, listening to us, supporting me, and everything else. And let me leave you with this, as I do every episode. Wherever you go and whatever you do, be good, be safe, and always keep on growing.
Fans, we've brought you All-Star Championship Wrestling. This is Sam Manager thanking you for being with us and saying until next time, so long, everyone.